The best insight, instant feedback, accountability. The all-new Talk Radio Freedom 106.5.
Let's head to our guest and let's talk cancer right here in this hour. We are welcoming Dr. Yasmin Hossain. Good morning to you and welcome to Freedom 106.5 FM. How are you?
Hi, good morning, everyone. Thank you for having me.
So today we are talking about cervical cancer or cervical cancer. Mm-hmm. As far as I understand, this type of cancer is one of, I guess it's the leading cancer that kills. Is that correct?
Yes, it is, especially in women, primarily because most of the time cervical cancer is a cancer that is diagnosed in the late stages. Mm. So even though we have screening programs in place, the symptoms of cervical cancer in particular, they only come about when the woman is more in an advanced stage in their cancer, and then they seek help for the symptoms that we will go through shortly. Mm-hmm. So by the time they experience these symptoms and they seek help, the cancer is already advanced to a point where we are a bit limited in what we can do. So it is one of the leading causes of cancer in women in Trinidad and even globally.
Now, you said in women, is it possible for men to get it? I mean, the area would not be called the cervix.
No. So men can get cervical cancer, mm-hmm. but the same virus that causes cervical cancer in women, men can have HPV virus, which we will discuss shortly. Mm-hmm. And when men have HPV virus, they can get cancers of the penis, cancers of the anus, and oropharyngeal cancer as well.
All right, so let's take it back a little bit. So we understand that cervical cancer appears mainly in women. It is the highest killer in terms of cancers for that. What are the symptoms? Unfortunately, you said that when it's at the late stages, these symptoms do show. So what are the symptoms that would appear?
So the symptoms that we are looking for is irregular vaginal bleeding, whether it's a long period, a heavy period, bleeding between the periods, bleeding after intercourse, a lot of pelvic pain, even something as simple as an abnormal vaginal discharge, which we may disregard initially. All of those are symptoms of cervical cancer. But these symptoms only come about when the cancer is already mainly about stage 2. In pre-cancer and early cervical cancer, you can actually have no symptoms at all.
And you said that screening is very important. What type of screening is available for cervical cancer?
So screening is primarily done by the pap smear testing. So we usually advise that women who engage in sexual activity have their pap smears done every 3 years at least from the age of 21 to the age of 65. We are currently starting to introduce HPV screening as part of cervical cancer screening. And if you choose to do HPV screening, we do advise that you do it from the age of 30 every 5 years until the age of 65. You can do both HPV and pap smear co-testing at the same time, usually from the age of 30. The reason why we choose the age of 30 to do HPV screening is because your body naturally clears HPV at a young age. So if a young girl who is 20, 21, 22 does an HPV test and it's positive, it doesn't mean that she will have changes on her cervix or any abnormality on her cervix from this HPV, because HPV is a virus that we may all contract at some point in our lives, and our body actually clears the HPV virus naturally within 1 or 2 years. It's only in a small number of patients, maybe about 10% of women, the HPV virus can persist, and in this small number of women, once it persists for a few years or beyond the time your body should clear it, then it starts to cause changes on your cervix. So that's really the screening we have, either a pap smear at least every 3 years from the age of 21, or your HPV screening every 5 years from the age of 30.
Now, you did say that the HPV virus is the virus that causes or can cause cervical cancer, and then you said that some may not develop it. What are the conditions within the body that would help to not get it? You know, if there's a way that we could create that condition.
So, as I said, it is a virus, and your immune system is supposed to clear it over time. So anything that will boost our immune system can help us in clearing the HPV virus. And we actually find in patients who has a lower immune system, they will have a more persistent virus. So once you are healthy, you eat well, exercise, you don't smoke, and you take care of yourself, vitamins, zinc, all of these things, you can actually clear the HPV faster. Whereas in patients who smoke, with a weak immune system, obesity, they tend to have a more persistent HPV, which can lead to the changes on your cervix that we spoke about.
And are there symptoms that can tell you that you do have the HPV virus?
No, unfortunately, HPV virus is very asymptomatic. So the only way to know if you have the virus is if you do the HPV test, the screening tests.
And as you said, that could be run conjunctively with pap smears that you have to do.
Yes.
Every 5 years.
Yes, every 5 years.
Now, you're saying that earlier on, we did say that cervical cancer affects women more. But you did say that there are effects for their partners, the men. What would that look like what would that present as in men?
Yeah, so I meant that the HPV virus affects both men and women. So yes, HPV can cause changes on your cervix and we get cervical cancer. But men who have HPV, they can also get penile cancer, cancer of the anus, and oral cancer. And that would usually cause symptoms such as growths on the penis, bleeding from the back passage, growths in the mouth, ulcers in the mouth, symptoms like that in men.
And what type of treatment, if it is that you do catch it early, cervical cancer, are there any treatments that are suggested for further spread?
Yeah, so actually, if you are doing your screening as you should, and you detect these pre-cancer changes on your cervix, there are biopsies we can do to confirm, and they are very minor procedures where we could actually just take a small piece of the cervix and treat the pre-cancer changes on the cervix before they could actually lead to cancer. So that is one of the ways we could actually prevent cervical cancer overall, if you actually do your screening and you pick up these pre-cancer changes early. However, unfortunately, if you do end up having cervical cancer, yes, if it's in a very early stage, you can still just take a small piece of the cervix, which we call a cone procedure, where we just take off piece of the cervix alone, and that can be curative in a very early stage cervical cancer. And we have patients who want to conceive and want to get pregnant and they don't want to have a hysterectomy, so all these minor procedures can work for them. We even have a procedure for a very early stage cancer where we could just remove the cervix alone and leave the womb inside, and that can be curative for a very early cancer. But as the cancer progresses into a more advanced stage, you end up having to do major surgery such as a hysterectomy, where we remove the womb and the cervix and the top of the vagina and the surrounding tissue, even the lymph nodes. It's a very extensive surgery as we advance in the stage of the cancer. And if you are beyond a certain stage, so let's say you in late stage 2 or even stage 3, where the cancer has spread to a point where you can't have surgery, the treatments are actually just radiotherapy and chemotherapy alone. But in the very early stages, minor procedures or even a hysterectomy is curable.
Now, the thing is, within diagnosis, as you say, different stages and so on, does it affect menopause? I mean, you briefly mentioned conception. How do these procedures are affected within the female body? I mean, it does depend on the age, but how are these affected?
If you have to have a full hysterectomy, where we take the womb out, the surrounding tissue. We usually will take the ovaries out as well, right, to prevent spread to other areas. So you will not be seeing a period again, and you will go into menopause at the time that we do these procedures. If it's just a very, very early cancer and we're just taking out the cervix or just part of the cervix alone, then you will not experience menopause. You will still see a period like normal because your womb will be inside. So it really depends on the type of procedure that you have. And that very much depends on the stage you are diagnosed at. And that very much depends on how early we catch it, which we all trying to encourage patients to do their screening. So even if you do, for some reason, end up with cervical cancer, it's a very early stage. So we can just do these minor procedures alone. You maintain your fertility, you get to keep your ovaries, and you don't go into menopause. But once we have to reach to the point of a major surgery, as a hysterectomy to remove the womb, yes, you will go into menopause pretty much immediately. Unfortunately.
So it seems that HPV is a sexually transmitted disease. Would it be described as that?
Yes, it is acquired through sexual contact. And I think because of the nature of the virus, there's a lot of stigma attached to the vaccine. And I believe that is a reason why we don't have a lot of uptake in the vaccine, which we will come to just now. But HPV, yes, is acquired through sexual contact, and it is very, 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 very common. So by the time women reach the age of 50, at least 4 out of 5 women would have already been in contact with HPV, and their body would have just cleared it naturally, and they may not have had any reason to know that they had HPV. But it is very common.
So another preventative measure would be to have yourself regularly checked for STIs.
STIs, yes, correct.
And from a young person's perspective, so we can go to the vaccine now, there has been a call for young girls to be vaccinated.
Vaccinated, yeah. Yes.
Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Right. So we have a few types of vaccines available. And we do recommend that we start rolling out the vaccines from the age of 9 to 26. But even after the age of 26, so up until the age of 45, we do recommend that patients still consult with their doctors and get their HPV vaccine. And the reason why, 9 sounds like a very young age, but the reason why it's put that way is because the best way to prevent anything at all is to have the HPV vaccine administered before any exposure at all. Because by the time someone is like 26, 30, they may have already been exposed to the HPV virus, and the efficacy of the vaccine may be lowered. So that is why it's such a young age, from the age of 9. So with regards to the types of vaccines that we have available, we have the regular Gardasil. I believe this is the one that the health centers have. Gardasil, which covers the 4 types of HPV, which is 2 high-risk types and 2 low-risk types. And this vaccine will actually decrease your risk of cervical cancer by 70%, right? So it's very effective. And there's a more advanced one, Gardasil 9, which covers 9 types of HPV, and that could actually decrease your risk of cervical cancer by 90%. So the vaccine is very, very, very effective. So we do recommend that patients get their vaccines, and if they have young girls or even young sons growing up, from the age of 9, 11, you start having the discussion about the vaccine, because we really want to get the vaccine in before any exposure to the HPV happens. That is when it's most effective.
Now, you said that there are 9 types?
So there are more than 100 types of HPV, but 9 only covers 9 types. And the reason why, it's because they have done studies on all of these 100 types of HPV, but not all of them would cause cancer. So we have high-risk HPV, which will cause cancer. Now we have low-risk HPV, which actually does not cause cancer, but will cause genital warts, right? So the more common types that would cause cancer is what the vaccine would cover. The vaccine won't cover all of the 100 types of HPV. And that is another important point, because a lot of patients may think, you know, well, if I have the vaccine, I don't need to screen, but that is where they are wrong. You have the vaccine, which will decrease your risk of cancer by 90% because it covers the high risk types, 9 types. But however, there are other types of HPV that you could probably be exposed to. So you are still, there's still a 10% risk. So you still have to do the screening, even though you have the vaccine, you still have to do your pap smear screening.
Now the thing is, this song, like, I need to stay home and wrap up in bubble wrap. come on. In terms of the pushback that the association has been getting on the vaccine, are there any assurances from research that this is the best course for young girls and young boys as well? Because the young boys can take the vaccine as well, yes?
Yes, yes, of course, yeah.
So what would we be saying to parents and to guardians about the after effects, if there are effects, what would be the best course in administering this vaccine?
So in terms of after effects, honestly, if you think about it, it's just like a regular vaccine, right? In terms of side effects, you get your regular fever, you may get a little pain after. There are no real adverse events or side effects associated with the vaccine. I think the true problem with the vaccine is that the stigma attached to HPV being, you know, one of a sexually transmitted virus, and a lot of people have difficulty coming to terms with, you know, allowing their child to have a vaccine that is associated with a sexually transmitted disease. So, but I think we have to move away from that type of thinking and encourage, because if you think about it, your child, you know, at some point in their life, let's say they turn 25, 30, at some point in their life, they are going to meet somebody, they may engage in that activity later on, right? So it doesn't mean that if you vaccinate a 9-year-old or 11-year-old, that is, you know, the type of activity that will be happening. But I think a lot of people, you know, they have that stigma attached, and we have to get away from that type of thinking. The only reason we have this age group is because we have to get the vaccine in before, and there's no adverse effects with it. And if I give somebody the HPV vaccine, you know, it's an inactivated vaccine. It doesn't mean that the person will be exposed to the HPV virus if they get the vaccine, right? It does the converse. So I think there's the stigma we have to try to break away from.
Now, how about diet and normal upkeep of the body, pre-diagnosis, post-diagnosis? What would that look like?
So diet does play a huge role in cancer and fighting off cancer, because as I said, the immune system is supposed to help you clear this HPV. And if your immune system is supposed to help you clear this HPV that is causing this cancer, then you have to keep your body healthy in order to clear this HPV. So you have to eat foods that are rich in antioxidants to help to support the immune system, lots of vegetables, the zinc, the vitamin C. You have to avoid alcohol, smoking, avoid the processed foods, the high sugary foods. So diet does play a huge part in the actual fighting off of the HPV and the prevention of the cervical cancer, or even throughout the process of the diagnosis of cancer. Anti-inflammatory diet is really, really good for patients to keep up their immune system. Very important.
And finally, the introduction of young girls to testing. How important is that? And once again, can you remind us as to how often testing should be done for cervical cancer and any other cancer that we are fighting?
In terms of the cervical cancer screening, we usually start from the age of 21 with a pap smear at least every 3 years, right? Now, the age of 21, why we suggested this age is because below the age of 21, like I said, we may girls may get HPV, we may have little subtle changes on the cervix, but your body clears these things naturally. And if we start to screen from before the age of 21, you may actually pick up abnormalities that won't really change anything for the person, and you may over-treat them unnecessarily and subject them to a lot of anxiety unnecessarily. So the idea is that when you are young, even if you get exposed to the HPV, even if you have minor changes on your cervix, your body, once you are healthy, will take care of this for you. So from the age of 21, that is when we suggest starting cervical cancer screening, and that is with a pap smear every 3 years. Now, the HPV screening, if you want to do an HPV test instead of having to do a pap smear test every 3 years, because the HPV test is actually every 5 years, so you have a break between, instead of the pap smear every 3 years, you do your HPV from the age of 30, right? So it's from the age of 21, we start cervical cancer screening. Anything below that may be, you know, overzealous or overdiagnosis. Too much anxiety for no reason.
Mm-hmm. And finally, for the men, how often should they test?
I think that they should also do their HPV testing every 5 years as well, because I will equate it to how we women screen. I think men should do their HPV testing every 5 years and also undergo vaccination. And, you know, the reason why I brought men into the conversation is because cervical cancer, we link it with women, it is a woman-based problem. However, HPV exists for both genders, and we can contract HPV from our partners. So men also have to do their part in helping us prevent against cervical cancer. It's not us alone. That's what I believe.
Well, I want to thank you so much for taking the time to come and give us that information. In terms of contact, especially with the Trinidad and Tobago Cancer Society, are there testing spots? Where can they call, or what are the numbers to call to get more information?
I will let Dr. Basdeo give you a little more information on the contact for the Cancer Society. But yes, there are a lot of screening programs set in place from the Trinidad and Tobago Cancer Society. They do have a lot of mobile clinics that go around doing breast screening, cervical screening, prostate exams, all of these things for the public. But I will let Dr. Basdeo get back to you on the contact numbers for Cancer Society. And you can actually visit the Cancer Society to get these things done in-house as well.
All right. Well, for those who are listening right now and need that number, you can check the Trinidad and Tobago Cancer Society online. I believe they're on Facebook as well. Yes. And yes. I will find the number. Don't worry. Thank you so much, Doctor, for taking the time. And next week?
Yes. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Take care.
The best insight, instant feedback, accountability. The all-new Talk Radio Freedom 106.5.